Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. After the Mahasnan was finished, the deity was again massaged with scented oil and his body made glossy. Then the last bathing ceremony was performed with scented water kept within a conch shell. Purport. In his commentary on this occasion, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur quotes from the Hari Bhakti Vilas, barley powder, wheat powder, vermilion powder, urad dal powder, and another powder prepared called abhata, made by mixing banana powder and ground rice, are applied to the deity's body with a brush made from the hair at the end of a cow's tail. This produces a nice finish. The oil smeared over the body of the deity should be scented. To perform the Mahasnan, at least 2.5 manas, about 24 gallons, which is about 100 liters, of water are needed to pour over the body of the deity. Hare Krishna. It's very interesting, right? When I read this purport for the first time, I was feeling like a cook or something. All the ingredients for cooking. And so, this is a very interesting part of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita because it does describe in great details the bathing ceremony of Sri Gopal and this is quite unusual, right? Because everything we read or hear, we kind of apply on ourselves. And so basically what's been described in here that the deity has been already bathed thoroughly, but then after this bathing, all these ingredients were put on the deity, which are, again, barley powder, wheat powder, vermilion powder, urad dal powder, and another powder preparation called avata. That's mixing banana powder and ground rice. So all this was put on the deity's body, and then there was a Mahasnan, so deity was again bathed. And, you know, you might wonder, after you bathe yourself, would you like to kind of, you know, put on yourself some kind of, you know, wheat powders and bathe again? But this is the difference between us and Krishna, right? And so this is what Krishna consciousness is all about. Because going back to Sri Gopal, the Supreme Lord, he's been worshipped, as Sutta Prabhu described nicely. He's been worshipped since the time of Bhajanab Maharaj. And then after the Mughals started ruling and destroying temples and desecrating deities and creating havoc, so the pujaris and devotees of Sri Gopal, they decided to hide him in jungle and actually, you know, bury him underground. And you might wonder, you know, that and this is a general kind of question we might ask, that why Krishna, Sri Gopal, first of all, allowing these kind of calamities, right? And then, what do you call, subjecting himself to such a trouble, staying under the earth for long time, and then pleading with Mother Vendrapuri, please rescue me, and then, you know, complaining that I've been under the earth for so long, my body now is very hot, so bring a lot of cool water to bathe me, and, you know, it's like very surprising. The Supreme Lord, right? The Lord and Master of the entire universe, hiding from Muslims and suffering all these inconveniences, and then, you know, Mother Vendrapuri comes and rescues, and all this is happening. And this is very surprising, right? And also, in, you know, going way back to 5,243 years back. This is exactly when Govardhan Lila took place, right? Because Krishna was born 5,250 years back. So at the time of Govardhan Lila, he was 7, so makes 5,243 years. And so Krishna is, as we know, discouraging Nanda Maharaj and other Brajabasis from worshipping Indra, and he says, don't worry, Indra doesn't really matter, just do what I say, and they believe him. You know, he basically says, who cares about Indra, we get rains anyway. So they say, fine. They do this yagya for Govardhan, and then the rain comes. And such a rain comes, they never saw such a rain. When Krishna is doing something, he is doing it really large scale, right? And then there is so much peace. Can you imagine, you know, hail, stones falling on your head, etc. And it's flood everywhere, and it's really cold. And so they run to Gopal, and they say, you know, we want the rain, but not that much. So can you please do something about it? And then Gopal says, okay, it's raining. What do we need? Umbrella. But umbrella should be big enough for everybody. Okay, so what can we use for umbrella? Okay, this hill will be good enough. So he leaves Govardhan, and the rest is history. And this is very interesting. And actually, we'll be reading this on Monday and discussing. And, you know, actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Krishna knew that very well. I mean, Krishna is Trikalagya. Even his devotees are Trikalagya, what to speak of Krishna. Krishna knew about everything what happened. So basically, Krishna knows about all these things, right? That means Sri Gopal knew about the Muslims, and Sri Gopal knew about the hideout under the ground, going underground, and Mother Vendrapuri and everything. So that's a very interesting question that, you know, one of the most challenging questions in this world is why bad things happening to good people. But this is even more interesting question, why such trouble is self-imposed voluntarily by the Supreme Lord, right? So that's a good question. I'm not going to answer. I'll just leave it with you. I'll leave you with that question. But there is another very interesting aspect, which is again connecting to the last Saturday's class. Sunday's class, right? Anyway, previous class, it was almost 1 week ago, of course. You were all much younger back then. But I'm sure some of you might remember that Sutapa Prabhu's main point was, actually, you know, it was very interesting kind of class because he kind of diverted from the topic and went all the way around. And basically, you know, made the point that deity worship is not so relevant, this and that. And he quoted very interesting verse from the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, which explains that even though deity worship was very popular in Vapara Yuga, which is a fact, because according to scientific discovery, the very first deity worshipped on the Earth planet is 40,000 years old, which makes it exactly in Dwapara Yuga, right? Which is the proof that Dwapara Yuga was the time when the deity worship was very popular. Incidentally, anyone knows which deity we speak about? Scientifically proved first ever worshipped deity on the earth? Huh? No. He's not even in India. He's in Germany, and he is called Lion Man. That's his official name, because he has head of the lion and body of the man, so he's called Lion Man. And he's been definitely object of worship because of different paraphernalias and decorations were found next to him. Yeah. So, I mean, this is scientists are very, very proud of this discovery. 40,000 years statue which has been worshipped. And they, you know, wrecking their heads, you know, like, why is it a lion man and who was worshipping him and where it's all coming from? And they still can't figure it out. Who is the lion man? Anyway, we'll be celebrating the anniversary of Lion Man's appearance very soon, right? So anyway, that, yes, definitely in Dwapara Yuga, deity worship was very popular. And then, as the verse was saying, that it was introduced in Treta Yuga. But here is the kind of quiz question for you, that when was the first deity ever worshipped on earth, not according to science, but according to Bhagavatam? Which deity was worshipped first, when, and who worshipped that deity? No, that was later. No. Well, Balaji, it is true, but Balaji is coming from the previous Kali Yuga, and actually his worship was kind of forgotten and then only resumed in Kali Yuga again. So Balaji is actually the deity for Kali Yuga. No. Anyway, according to Bhagavatam, the first deity was actually worshipped in Satya Yuga, because Dhruva Maharaj lived in Satya Yuga and Narad Muni instructed him to make the deity of Lord Vishnu and worship in the forest when he was doing his meditation. So that's the first ever historical account that at that time deity worship was not at all prominent. But here we go. Every rule has exception. And so then... deity worship was always there, and chanting was always there, and meditation was always there, and yagyas were always there in all the ages. And it's just a matter which spiritual activity is more prevalent than the other. And of course, because chanting of the holy name is very prevalent at this time, that's why it is said that, what's that? Kalaota Hari Kirtanam, that in Kali Yuga there is only chanting of the holy name. This is the only process which works. This was exact point which was made last time. And we understand, according to Prabhupada's teachings, is that, yes, it is true that chanting of the holy name is the most powerful way of spiritual advancement, and that chanting of the holy name is not exclusively reserved to Gaudiya Vaishnavas, Vaishnavas, or even Hindus, that chanting of the holy name means name of the Supreme Lord, any name which people know in their tradition, and so if they chant name of God, they will advance spiritually, right? And deity worship is secondary, and so another food for thought is that it seems to have a huge, not just huge, but massive support in so-called Abrahamic traditions, which include Muslims, Christians, and Jews, because they all come from the same source. They all based on Old Testament and New Testament as well. So, you know, they come from Abraham. So their lineage started with Abraham, so they are called Abrahamic traditions. And these traditions are dead against deity worship. Why? Because they consider deity worship to be idol worship. And that's been very strongly discouraged, that Lord Jesus spoke about it. And historically, Muhammad, when he came to Mecca, and in there apparently was a huge temple with so many deities. So what he did, he destroyed physically all these deities. He broke down all these deities, and apparently there was only one black stone left. Some people say it was Shivalingam. And so that was the only object which he hasn't destroyed. So to such an extent, Abrahamic traditions are against deity worship because they consider it to be idol worship. And so for us, it is very important to understand what's the difference between deity worship and idol worship, and do we actually need deity worship at all. So, let's try it with you. So, what makes genuine deity worship different from idol worship?
In the Nectar of Devotion, it's stated that Shri Krishna comes in the form of Archa Vigraha, mm-hmm. which is the deity form to accept the service of the devotees.
Okay, and how it is different from idol worship?
That's not. Although it's made from the external energy of Krishna, it's matter. However, Krishna doesn't say that he's that stone specifically. He comes in a specific form that looks in a specific
Okay,
way.
So idol worship means worshipping anyone who is not Krishna, worshipping other deities. That's idol worship, right? According to your version. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, Nishkinchan Chaitanya Prabhu.
The presence of the Pran Pratishtha ceremony.
Okay, Pran Pratishtha ceremony has to be done. Thank you. Anyone else? Sankirtan Priya Prabhu.
The deity has to be made with specific metals and wood, or wood or stone.
Okay, specific metals or specific woods, according to scripture. Sam?
The pure devotee has called the Lord into...
Okay, pure devotee calls for the Lord to appear. Any ladies have any thoughts on the matter? How deity worship is different from idol worship?
Okay.
Please pass on the mic.
That the idol worship, so there's an example given with the letterbox, isn't it? So if it's not authorized, you know, it will not reach the place. The letter would not reach the one who has to receive it. So through deity worship, it receives. You have the direct connection to God.
Okay, yes. Deity worship is authorized, idol worship is not authorized. Okay, these were all the good tries. And now, let's hear... Okay, Prabhu, last one. Please take the mic.
That idol worship is worshipping like the body, false idols, we're focused on the body, like individuals and for example, leaders and things, to worshipping false idols, that it's focused on the material body.
Okay. So actually this answer is much closer to what I wanted to read to you, because this is what Srila Prabhupada has to say. And this is excerpt from his lecture given in Los Angeles on the occasion of the installation of Rukmini Dvarakadish. That those of you who have been to Los Angeles have seen those deities, very beautiful ones. And so this is July 16, 1969. Srila Prabhupada says, without being purified, you cannot touch Radha Krishna. In the Vedas, it is stated, without becoming Brahman, you cannot approach Brahman. Just like, without becoming fire, you cannot approach fire. Because the inconsistency of temperature, it will burn. Just like, here is fire, and I am feeling temperature, but the fire flames within the fire, they do not feel because the temperature is the same. Similarly, without becoming Brahman, without understanding oneself, realizing himself, nobody can. Krishna is the para Brahman. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan. Bhagavad Gita 10.12. That is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Purusham Shashvatam. Therefore, one has to keep himself very purified. Otherwise, you cannot touch Krishna. That is not possible. It is fire, so you have to become fire. And how to become fire? Fire, you are also fire, but now you are covered fire. Covered by this material body. Therefore, you have to spiritualize this body by purification process. The same example, just like the iron rod. It's iron, but you put into the fire. It becomes warm, warmer, warmer than red hot, then it is fire. Similarly, by this process, chanting process, by regulative process, you are becoming warmer, 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 warmer. And when you fully become red hot warm, then your body is as good as Krishna's. So we have to keep ourselves always in the fire of Krishna consciousness. Then everything will be all right. So you got to be always fired up. Otherwise, it will become dull and it will be simply idol worship. That's all. That is the difference between idol worship and deity worship. And now listen very carefully to the next sentence. He really hits the nail on the head with this one. If there is no life, then it is idol worship, hedonism. I hope everyone is familiar with this word, hedonism, what hedonism means. And when there is life, feeling, where is Krishna? Here is Krishna. Oh, I have to serve Krishna. I have to dress him. I have to serve Radharani. She is here. Oh, I must do it very nicely. And as far as possible, decorate her to the best capacity. In this way, if you always feel Krishna conscious, then you are fire. The same example, keeping with the fire. And if you think it is a brass made doll, I mean to say idol. Yayathamam prapadyante tamstataya bhajam yaham, Bhagavad Gita 4.11. If you think this is a brass made idol, then it will remain a brass made idol to you forever. But if you elevate yourself to a higher platform, Krishna consciousness, then Krishna, this Krishna, will talk to you, will talk with you. This Krishna will talk with you. Shall Prabhupada ki jai. So, I hope now everyone is clear. What's the difference between deity worship and idol worship, right? That's very profound. So it's actually not just about being authorized and not even about being installed by pure devotee and not even done according to Vedic standards. What it is all about? Consciousness, our attitude. It's very important because in the preface to or introduction to Nectar of Instruction, this is what Srila Prabhupada says, that our progress in Krishna consciousness depends solely and wholly, well, he doesn't say solely and wholly, but he just says, depends on our attitude, on the attitude of the devotee, of the worshipper. So it's really important. Attitude is everything. And so if we have attitude that, okay, these are just sculptures, then okay, that the deity will say, okay, this is how you want to treat me, I'll be the sculpture for you. But if you really understand that this is the Supreme Lord, then Krishna can talk with you and will talk with you. And you can communicate very nicely with the deity. And so you can really develop your Krishna consciousness. And because even though Kali Yuga is really for chanting the holy name, but if there is no next step, then actually there will be no advancement. And my case for chanting the holy name without deity worship is Islam. And it's like Muslims are extremely serious about chanting the holy name. And I've seen a footage from ISIS military operation, and the guy was operating the gun which is shooting mines. What do they call it? Anyway, he's just putting these mines or grenades into the gun and then it shoots, right? And with each grenade he's putting into the gun, he says, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. So it's like extremely God-conscious guy. And yet terrorist. Which brings another huge question, right? That Srila Prabhupada says on more than number of occasions that Muhammad is Shakti Avesh Avatar. Because basically, you know, his reasoning is very simple. Whatever is genuine, whatever really comes from the Supreme Lord will stand the test of time. That no genuine tradition, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. No genuine tradition can survive the test of time. I mean, only genuine tradition can survive the test of time. Other traditions will perish. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Bhakti Loka explains the same thing. So Muslim traditions survive the test of time. It's, more than 1,500 years, right? And so seems to be a genuine tradition. And yet, there is no deity worship. But it's very interesting, actually. On the other side, devotees in Mayapur, when they need some construction work done, and unanimously they prefer to hire Muslims rather than Hindus. Why? Because each time they hire a Muslim, he will be very honest and very responsible. Each time they hire a Hindu, there will be cheating and negligence. So they decide, okay, no Hindus, only Muslim workers. quality, right? On the other side, this, you know, it's not even depending, we might say, okay, these fanatics, they blah, 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 might not be serious about spiritual life, spiritual practices. Two very shocking examples Hridayananda Maharaj brings up. First one is Aurangzeb. No, actually, he brings up one example. The other one I came across independently. Aurangzeb, who has been known, you know, like complete monster, would be killing Brahmanas, Vaishnavas, destroying temples, deities, creating total havoc. And yet, in his private life, he's been known as extremely serious about his spiritual practices, never missed one namaz in his life, and followed everything Quran prescribes to the T. Right? Not only that, the guy has been so humble that he ordered to bury him in unknown location without any signs, just, you know, put me in the ground and don't mark that spot at all. Make sure no one knows where I'm buried. And another example I came across was Osama bin Laden. And it's very interesting that he's been so that serious about his chanting the holy name and other spiritual practices, reading Quran and everything. And he would invite guests to his house, and he would cook for them personally, and he would feed them with his own hands, and would not touch any food until all the guests are fully fed, fully satisfied. After they would finish, he would collect their remnants and eat only that. And yet, these guys were monsters. So, and yeah, Hridayananda Maharaj makes very interesting case that it's not an unusual for someone who to be very, very serious and very good in one's spiritual practices and yet be a demon. That's very interesting, right? So something is missing. And so this is the question for you, what's missing? Is it enough to become that serious about chanting the holy name? Is it enough to be fully absorbed in scriptures and even serve guests and develop personal humility? Is it enough? Apparently not. Something is missing. And what is missing? Relationship with Krishna. And so this is next step, 2.0, right? Next generation development. That we go from Nama to Rupa and then Guna and Lila, because it's not enough to be on the level of Nama, that, you know, we might chant Nama Aparad and not even understand it, right? That's why for purification, acharyas have introduced deity worship. And it's very interesting that, you know, Prabhupada says, deity worship is just for neophytes. And we, of course, think, we are not neophytes. We don't need this, right? So let only neophytes worship the deities. Yeah. So this is exactly, actually, this is the proof that if I think I'm not a neophyte, then who am I? Neophyte. There is a very interesting, phenomenon, anyway, effect, yeah. scientists discovered Daniel Kruger effect. Anyone heard of this? It says that qualified people normally feel they are not qualified, and unqualified people normally feel they are very qualified. And we know it is true from what acharyas are saying in their songs, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, they say, we are very fallen, we are very low, we are nothing. And what the demons are saying, you know, Ishvaraham Aham Bhogi, Siddhoham Bhalavan Sukhi, I am the best, I am the greatest, etc., etc. So this is supported by the scripture and by the practice. And so if I'm thinking I'm not a neophyte, that's the first and foremost warning sign that I am actually the biggest neophyte. So much so that I don't even understand why acharyas have introduced the process of deity worship. Because deity is Krishna, right? And it's very interesting how Srila Prabhupada started deity worship in ISKCON, right? That was in San Francisco. And Malati Devi, she actually nicked Jagannath from the Indian shop, right? Because these were their habits. And she was thinking, this must be something special. And let me ask Srila Prabhupada. So she brought Jagannath Deity to Srila Prabhupada, said, you know, Srila Prabhupada, I got this doll from Indian shop. Can you say, what is this? And suddenly Srila Prabhupada just fell flat on the ground. Boom, full dandavat. And started chanting pranam mantras, long time. And she was like, what happened? To Srila Prabhupada, I just showed him this doll and then now he's on the ground. And then Srila Prabhupada stood up and reverentially folded his hands and he said, Lord of the universe have arrived. So now we have to start worshipping him. And then, of course, he wanted Shyamasundar to carve Jagannath Deity, and he was carving Jagannath Deity while smoking and keeping the pack of cigarettes on Jagannath's head, etc. And then Prabhupada entered and saw that scene, and we know the rest of it. And so for Srila Prabhupada, it is very clear why Jagannath, why not Krishna, why not any other deity appeared in San Francisco. Yeah, because who is Jagannath? Who was worshipping Jagannath from the beginning? Tribal people, right? Wild guys in Puri. And Puri is situated on the banks of the ocean, so Prabhupada saw the similarity. Okay, I am in San Francisco, we're also on the bank of the ocean, and all these devotees are kind of wild bunch. So it's naturally that Jagannath has appeared. So let them worship Jagannath, because Jagannath is very merciful. He can take the worship even from, you know, hippies. So that's very interesting that this is the pure devotee, that he actually is in Krishna's pastimes all the time. And so whatever is happening, he's seeing as Krishna's arrangement. And then he realized that deity worship, actually Krishna wanted ISKCON devotees to worship deities, because for them this is a very serious step forward in terms of purification. And there are six types of purification which are prescribed, satshuddhi, prescribed in Pancharatrika, right? That first is sthana shuddhi, place has to be pure, then dravya shuddhi, articles have to be pure, atma shuddhi, body has to be pure, you know, bathing and clean clothes, chitta shuddhi, consciousness has to be pure, mantra shuddhi, mantras have to be pure, means there should be no offenses, and only then you can do the murti shuddhi, which is described in here. So murti shuddhi, you know, purifying the deity, cleansing and bathing the deity, comes only after the preliminary processes have done, right? So now we can understand how deity worship is serving as purifying via media for our consciousness. And I mean, I'm doing deity worship for more than 20 years individually, and not that I'm so pure or whatever, but I know how it works, that I wake up in the morning, and because deity is in the room, the first thing I have to do is to clean the room. I mean, it would not be the deity in the room, it would be my room, right? And why do I have to clean my room every single day, right? I would just be lazy and care less about it. But because there is a deity in the room, I understand, okay, it is deity's room, so I have to keep it clean. And I have to keep myself clean, and etc., etc. So there are so many things which are connected to that. And of course, worshipping the deity means developing personal relationship with the deity and learning about the deity. As I mentioned, I had interesting experiences, not any kind of dreams or, you know, deity talking to me or whatever, but physical reality experiences with the deity when I could learn what Krishna really wants. And this is what Krishna consciousness is about. What is the difference between Krishna consciousness and material consciousness? Anyone can say? Yes. Material consciousness means I do what I want. And Krishna consciousness? I only do what Krishna wants. So that's it. Of course, in the beginning, it's kind of mixed. Sometimes I do what I want, other times I do what Krishna wants, etc. So it's not fully on, but it's a process of purification. All right, so we could discuss that. Okay, of course, it's a very deep subject matter. But if there are any comments, questions, complaints, suggestions, Arun, remove.